Hello, and welcome to this episode of Unfinished Business. Loosely talks about making a living in creative services and on to internet. I'm your host, Wrexham superfan Andy Clark, and with me is my good friend,
Richard Rutter. Hello, Andy. Nice to talk to you again.
Listen, we're not actually allowed to talk about Wrexham today because we're recording this the day before the final match of the season.
Yes. My wife's a Coventry fan, so their season is already done and dusted and about as successful as it possibly could be.
We were very much hoping that Coventry might do us a little favour, but in fact, they did us a big disservice with a final goal in that 3-1 defeat away at Coventry last week. And that puts goal difference into play. So not only do we have to win, but we actually have to win by a decent margin, because otherwise it could purely come down to goal difference whether or not we get in the playoff.
Well, for optimistic Andy right now, that's good.
Yeah, and you know, we can't complain because this is first season in the Championship for Lord knows how long. And here we are on the possible, touch wood, keep everything crossed, cusp of a playoff place. So you can't complain, really, can you?
Definitely can't. Knocking on the door of the playoffs, pretty good effort.
So anyway, that's enough talk about.
Yeah.
So you sent me an interesting message earlier on when we were talking about what we might be discussing on the podcast today. And you'd had something interesting come through, which might sort of form the nugget of a topic.
Yeah, we had a brief recently, a request for proposal from a big arts organisation here in the UK. And what was, I don't know, just pleasing about it was the way that it had been, because often, particularly with public bodies, you get an RFP through, and it's the structure of the response in particular and the kind of very specific details you've got to provide, preferably in their Word template, and they've already decided exactly what you're going to do. Essentially, they just want to find out how little you're going to charge for it. Whereas this was different. This really set out it was written really nicely. It was a joy to read. It was quite a brief. And it started with the outcomes. It was saying, trying to explain what they knew, what they didn't know, the problems they were trying to solve. And yes, laying out some fairly enough detail of what they wanted from the agencies that they'd already selected. So it wasn't an open brief. They selected 9 people to talk to. And fortunately, Clearleft was one of those. They'd given it, because they just made the whole project sound really enthusiastic and the people behind it really enthusiastic. So we're always really interested in whoever we're trying to work for. On the outside, it could sound like a really dull organisation, but there's never dull challenges. But actually, in this case, it was completely the opposite. And like I said, they just gave a lot of detail. They gave a price range. Yay. It was a broad one, but there's a range there. And they're saying, we don't want people to just come in the middle. We want you to come wherever you think is right, but this is the sort of range that we're prepared to pay. So tell us why you think it should be one end of it or the other, and we'll listen and understand. And you know, they were asking what we most want from people is an opinion and an approach and some sense of, you know, character and interest in the project at heart. And it was a lot of work to respond to, but I enjoyed it because it felt like, okay, this is written to get actually the right response, the people you've selected. I can work with what you're asking for. So it's quite a rarity from that point of view.
No, it's really, really interesting because, you know, I imagine lots of people are curious about the sort of clients and the process that, you know, Clearleft gets, because, you know, I've got to say, it's very different from the sort of stuff that, you know, that I tend to get. I tend to work much more with kind of, you know, smaller businesses or with individuals who, you know, they've got a much more of a kind of a muddled goal. That's one end of the spectrum. And on the other end of the spectrum, I tend to get things from if I do get things from public sector bodies, I always just feel as if it's kind of a box ticking exercise. I imagine quite often that there's an awful lot of boilerplate that goes into those kind of requests for proposals. So to get something which sounds as if they put some effort into actually making sounding appealing, if I got something like that through the mail, then I'd be looking forward to the actual process of kind of answering those questions.
Yeah, that's right. And that's what it did. And we're yet to find if we go through to the next round. But compared with, we try and apply to a few of the more open briefs that come through on things like the government's digital marketplace and stuff like that. But you know, they are hugely competitive and we don't do very well with those at all.
Stopped.
I think it's, apart from anything, it's a bit of a numbers game. A numbers game in terms of you're going to be up against dozens of other people, plus also, in some cases, the cost element is 40% of the decision making, which is kind of ridiculous. And that's not just for government things, that's for public sector ones. So there's, I'm going to call this out because we didn't win it. So University of Bath, where I went to, actually, so I was quite disappointed with this whole process with them. That was to do a significant piece of work with their website there. And they did give kind of the breakdown of like, this is how we're going to judge the different agencies and so on. Cent was on cost. And you're allowed in these process to write in questions and those questions get answered and anonymized, but the questions and answers then get played back to everybody. Someone said 40% of the cost. So what happens with the quality rating then? And they said anything that's under 3 out of 5 for quality, we're going to dismiss. But what that means is if you start to do some of the maths on that, 3 out of 5 is basically adequate. So they will accept adequacy provided it's cheap enough. Now, University of Bath is one of the top universities in the country. It's globally recognized. And as far as I'm concerned, as a graduate of Bath, adequacy is not where they should be aiming. They should be aiming much, much higher than that. And so to be able to say, well, if you're cheap and you're at least 3 out of 5 for quality, then you're the people for us. And it's like, is that what you are? Is that seriously your where you as an organization are set? And I was so annoyed about it. I wouldn't normally call an organization out like that. But anyway, we lost it.
I always found that those kind of weightings on cost, you just know that certain people are going to pitch in very, very low. But then you know that that's not what they're going to pay ultimately. You know, there's going to be extra stuff and it'll end up costing just as much as doing the job properly. And I used to find, in fact, we've stopped doing it now. I don't tend to respond to those competitive tenders at all. I think Sue might be signed up to a couple of portals, but we don't really participate in that kind of circus. Because, you know, it doesn't feel as if you're beginning a relationship with a client. It's worse than speed dating. Not that I've ever done any speed dating, but it sounds worse than that. Whereas actually the inquiry that you got sounded as if they were interested in you and the company and your approach and your interests, and they wanted those opinions and they wanted that participation and they wanted to, you know, potentially start a relationship, which is exactly how it should be. Why don't more people do this stuff?
And the way that it was being framed. One of the things I think that, and we've seen this before, and it always seems to work. This organization had hired someone who was ex-agency themselves. And that person put together this brief, clearly. And so I think partly because they were ex-agency, they knew what would work for agencies. And it was good that they trusted that person with it, because it was not the kind of brief that would come from at all. The process was fairly standard. You like you email your proposal back and then there's going to be a round of interviews and so on. That's all fine and that's good. But there was no like horribly structured paperwork. You were invited to respond free form, essentially, and we'll judge these things free form. We're not going to try and mark 25 different responses to try and make it fair so we can judge it. It's like, what's fair is you nine people, you nine agencies, then respond however you want, and we'll judge those independently of each other and see who we like best. And I, like I said, that had come from an individual, and we'd seen that with a few other organisations, and that, it, you know, I think they get a better job out of it. Some of those occasions we've actually won, some of them we haven't. But in some ways it makes me feel better, because even when you're not winning, because you think, well, the process you've done there, you've probably got someone who is really good, and you've probably got someone who is the right partner for you. And I don't mind so much if you know that if we don't win it, as long as you've chosen someone good, then that makes me feel a bit better.
I love the fact that the way in with the openness in the way that they were kind of encouraging you to respond could mean, I mean, I don't know, but it could mean even something as stupid as the way that you typeset your response. You know, the fact that what you send back to them could be beautiful Richard Rutter typography. It could actually, that attention to detail could actually be something that, you know, sparks a response in the...
I think that it is the case. I mean, we both share the same opinion about design and typography, and if you're the recipient of that, you don't have to understand type for it to have some kind of effect on you. And I'm sure seeing something which is nicely typeset and has got some nice imagery and maybe is a little bit different to what someone else might be sending you, it's going to stand out. If it's easy to read, it's easy to read, and that's good, and it's just going to appeal to you. And it's just so much nicer to do than saying, you must use this Word template and all your text must be 12-point Arial or else. Whereas you've got to, if they're looking for character and looking for opinion, which this organization was, then you should be allowed to provide that. And then it's up to you for that full response to actually do a job at the same time. And that's what design is for.
It's clear that this organization seems to have gone about this process in a way which you've responded to. Otherwise, you wouldn't have, A, wanted to respond to them, but also, you know, you wouldn't have brought it to the podcast and said, hey, this was something we could talk about. They were looking, they're looking for character and opinions and, you know, trying to find people that, you know, maybe have an approach that resonates with them, as opposed to, you know, just finding a supplier. So kind of the question is often then when people send these kind of RFPs out, because, you know, not everybody does. Quite often, you know, particularly with the people that I'm dealing with, it's like, hey, you know, we don't really know what we want, but, you know, we want a website and, you know, and here we go. So what's, you know, what is the purpose of sending those kind of RF? In my experience, I don't know whether you kind of share the same thing, is that quite often there's a huge amount of boilerplate that goes into the things that you receive, but also quite a lot of kind of pre-shinking, which is not necessarily going to reflect what is right for the client or right for the job or right for their goals or whatever else it might be. So it almost sometimes feels as if they're kind of almost like struggling to start a conversation. So, you know, what is the purpose of sending these things out?
I think they need to engage the market of agencies or whoever it is to come and make whatever improvements to their website or research or whatever it might be. Needs to be, and they just have very different approaches to it. Some of it will be wrapped up in, it's like the only way that we're allowed to procure something over a certain amount of money is through this system, and this is the proscribed way to do it. Procurement is not allowed to procure any service other than through this very precise methodology. Some of that's driven just by, I don't know, the people who end up working there. Some of it is supposedly driven by mandates for public bodies or whatever it is. But I'm not so sure. I think a lot of it, I think, like, the more prescribed the process is, the more, I think, the more naive often the client will be, or just particularly those ones where it is favouring cost over quality. and not realizing what they're actually saying with that sort of thing. Whereas those that are coming in to it saying, we want to make this investment because we've identified these problems. We want to have this change in outcome. We've got this change in strategy and we know we're doing something this way, but actually what we want to achieve is something different. Or we see, look, our booking system is just falling apart. We can see we're mature enough to see with our ticketing funnel that we're just dropping sales at some point. We don't know why. The technology we know is creaking at the seams because we're having to pay a fortune on a service contract. You know, they're identifying all of these business things. And it's like, these are our problems. We need them solved and we need someone to come in and help us solve them. How would you go about it? And that's then it's down to whoever they're talking to, you know, to give a structured response that resonates with them, that gives them the confidence. It says, yeah, I can see how I would work with that organization. Or to go back and say, well, we just don't know enough information as to how to do that properly. So can we have a literal conversation?
They're not asking you to provide a solution at this stage. They're asking how you approach it and what your thought process is going to be.
Yeah, the good ones are. But then some different RFPs, some different requests for proposal will be very specific because for some reason they've already decided what the solution is. And it's like, so it's going to, we're expecting our agencies to come back and describe a discovery phase, a UX phase, a design phase, a development phase, a visual design phase. And in the UX phase, we expect to see wireframes and we expect to see user journeys and so on. And then they just tell you how they think the job should be done, as if that's helpful. Very often with those, we've had to spend half the time saying, you've got that wrong. That's not how you do things nowadays. We don't do pictures of websites and then hand them over to a developer who then turns them into code. That's not how we work. That's not how modern design works, modern website works. And so you have to start educating the client before you can even say what you've got to do, to say, well, we can't give you a quote asking for what you're asking for, because what you're asking for is wrong. It won't give
but
you the
somebody
outcomes
will,
that you think they're going to.
Well, but somebody will.
That's the problem. Yeah, yeah. That's the problem or the potential problem. But also, and it does depend a lot on who you're talking to. Now, if that has come through from procurement, then you're talking to the wrong person and it's difficult to get that changed. If that's come through from an inexperienced design team who are being tasked with hiring an agency to fix a bunch of their problems, then at least you can potentially have a conversation, like the education conversation, if the process allows you to actually talk to someone. Where that isn't the case, that's just where, well, certainly we struggle. It's like, if we get to talk to people, then we're normally pretty good. And they gel with us because we know very well how to do it. We're extremely experienced working with clients. We like working with nice clients. And if they're listening, then you can start to form that helpful, supportive partnership. But if you're literally not allowed to talk to anyone, then that just becomes difficult. And also, I think the point I was making is, if it's come through procurement, you can't get that sniff of, is this just a procurement problem or is it actually embedded in the culture of the organization? And the culture of the organization is, you're a supplier. If we tell you to do wireframes, you're going to do wireframes. And if you can sniff that bit out, then not that wireframes are necessarily always the wrong thing to do, but you know, if it is, if you want to do something a different way, then we want to do something a different way. And we want to have that relationship where we're allowed to discuss that and persuade people like, this is going to give you a more efficient, effective output to achieve the outcomes you want, which is not black and white pictures of websites.
I love doing black and white pictures of websites. I've tried to convince clients to literally do black and white websites, but people seem to think that because you've got 48 million colors, you need to use all of them.
Yeah, nothing wrong with a bit of monochrome.
No, absolutely not.
Sold very well as a book, didn't it?
So, you know, if I'm running a business selling whatever it may be, let's say I'm an arts organization or I'm selling what Sue describes as plastic crap that I seem to have lots of assembling around my desk.
That's right.
What would be the best route to approach Clear Left about doing a project?
our preference is for that organization to be able to state what their outcomes are. So what they want to achieve. And that's not just what they want the website to be able to do. It's like, why have you got a website in the first place? Tell us that. And it might be because that's how we sell things, or it might be because that's how we persuade people to give us money because we're a charity. But as a charity, what we want to do is make the lives of small children better. And it's like, okay, that's a good outcome for us to understand. Like, that's ultimately why you want to then make this investment. So then what's wrong with what you've got at the moment? Why is that causing you problems, or why do you think it's limiting? And then we would want to know, then ideally it's like, well, okay, we know what you're trying to achieve. We know why you've got problems at the moment. Now let's have a conversation. And then we can find out a bit more about your team, your limitations, how much budget you have. Please give us a range of budget. It can be a ballpark. It can be a wide range, but just some sense of idea of whether you've got 5K, 50K, 150K, 500K. You know, it's like, got to know where quid. We're starting from. Yeah, a fiver. But that conversation then enables us to help that client work out more precisely perhaps what they're asking for, or for us to be able to say, we can either help you write a brief, which you could take to other people if you wanted, or we can turn this into something which is a bit more precise in terms of, okay, these are precisely the problems that we can fix for you. This is our general approach. Let's talk through that and let's refine that in terms of how that's going to fit into how much time you've got available. And basically kind of ideally work together to what will form a statement of work, which is, okay, now this does list what we're going to do, what we're not going to do, how long it's going to take and how much it's going to cost. But you start off with, what are you trying to ultimately achieve and what are your problems? Why are you making this investment? And it can work from there. And sometimes you get a brief which covers that nicely, like we did from the organization I was talking about earlier on. I'm sorry we can't say what that is. It's halfway through the process.
At some point, when we win it.
Yeah, when we win it, yeah.
No, not we, when we win it.
Yes, when we win it, yes.
No, it reminds me of, actually, David Ogilvy, the famous advertising mogul, wrote a book called Ogilvy on Advertising.
Mm.
Creative name. And part of that book was about the creative brief and about how it was actually the agency's job to help the client to come up with that brief for the job.
Yeah.
Your consultant that's obviously helped this organization out is not doing this for free.
No.
Possibly a fairly loose set of requirements or problems or challenges that they've got. Do you ever actually charge the client for coming up with the creative brief or the statement of work? Because essentially, you know, we are quite often, I feel, acting in that consultant role, you know, guiding the client, saying, actually, you need to think about this differently. Maybe that's not the problem you thought it was. Perhaps the potential solution could be to evaluate something different, whatever it is. And, you know, to me, that's kind of the start of doing the job.
But if you look to related services, maybe architecture, maybe even advertising, it would be standard to be charging for that because it is consultancy. So there are circumstances where we have done, particularly where the need has been bigger and looser, and where we said, okay, well, what you need is for us to spend a day or half a day or something like that running a workshop with you so we can get all of your inputs and turn that into a brief or turn that into a bit of a roadmap for you, which can then turn into a future partnership brief. And that's the kind of thing where that is slightly easier in a way to sell as a piece of consultancy that they see as useful as an investment. But you're quite right in terms of creating a set of sort of problems and on challenges that a client has into a brief that then they can use to procure the work or the solution from. That's valuable work that people should be paying for. But should it be? I think there's a strong argument that a lot of the time, perhaps not, because it's valuable in and of itself.
I've got a call with a potential client next week, and they actually sent me a brief through which says, and this actually came, they've hired a consultant to work on it with them. So, you know, not quite the same scale as this arts organization. I'm white. I'm narrowing the we down there. There was a fairly kind of like, this is what we think we need. We need these pages. We need this section. We need this or whatever. And, you know, you could argue that, you know, when this is actually such a small and simple thing that it doesn't need a terrible amount of consultancy. But I do think that actually the process of coming up with the job brief or the creative brief is something which is part of the chargeable body of work at some point down the line. You know, I'm probably going to be rolling it into the first few days of actually thinking about the design rather than, you know, diving straight into whether it's blue or green. But with a lot of organizations, that could be something that actually, you know, you're splitting it from the kind of the creative consultancy thinking part of it to the actual kind of narrowing down of the specifics of the user journeys or the sales funnels or the ultimately the black and white wireframes and the user journeys and all of that kind of stuff. So somebody's got to pay for that at some point.
If it's a creative brief where a creative brief is kind of the first step in deciding what the website's going to look like, to put it crudely, then that would be part of our discovery process and therefore paid for. It's where you're turning that broader set of, these are the problems we've got, these are the outcomes we're trying to achieve, tell us how you're going to do this for us, and turning, but bridging that gap between them saying, this is what we want to achieve, but we don't know how to do it, and coming back to them saying, well, this is how you would go about doing it, or this is how an agency would go about doing it. And for that to be a cost of sale rather than this is a piece of information that you can have and should be paying for because it's useful.
Yeah.
But creative brief is different for me. That's something that definitely would charge for.
Yeah, but I think I'm just thinking back now, it's been years since I've read Oglesby's book, but he was talking about, he described it as a creative brief, but it was also a set of problems. You know, we need to increase the number of cigarettes that we sell. So I think that it wasn't just the creative brief, wasn't purely about the creative. It was about, you know, well, what are we trying to do and what problems are we trying to solve and how are we going to measure whether we've had success or not?
Now, the measurement part of it is, again, something that then that gets paid for, that's wrapped up in the discovery. We run a benchmarking workshop, essentially, which is working out how best to measure success. So how can you measure where you are now? And therefore, these are the goals you want to achieve. So where are you now? Where do you want to be? How can we measure that you are not just there, but getting there? And that becomes quite important. So it's part of that is helping people use their analytics in a sensible way so they're not just looking at vanity numbers, but also helping work out what are the indications that you're heading in the right direction. If these numbers are going up, then ultimately you're going to get more sales, kind of thing, as opposed to, oh, we're selling more than we were. What about on the way there? How do you know you're starting to do the right thing that will start to trigger things in that direction? So that analytics and benchmarking thing is an important part of it, but that's definitely paid for.
Like I said, we don't tend to operate in the same kind of circles. I'm not sure whether I would, if I was to get somebody asking me to solve those problems, I don't think necessarily that I'd be the right person to speak to in terms of, you know, my process or the stuff that I'm interested in. But at the essence of it, it's like, how do people start a conversation with an agency? How do they start to develop that relationship? I think that's the nugget of it. And so many people will get that totally wrong, as the University of Bath appear to have done.
And I think the thing with the Bath University one was that was one of those ones which was put out to open tender on digital marketplace. So they would have had lots and lots of responses, and which would only have just make their outcomes even worse. Maybe they found someone cheap who could actually do the job really well for them. I hope so. But it was not a way to set up a relationship at all, which
and
is
I think
really
that's,
what you've got to be thinking.
Yeah, and that is something else, actually. I need to dig out my copy of Ogilvy on Design, because he does talk about the relationship building aspect of hiring an agency. You know, this is a group of people or an individual that you're going to be hopefully working with for the next, you know, X number of years. So what do you look for, and what conversations do you have? You know, do you make sure that you go out for dinner with these people? Yeah, I think there's something like that in the book. I'm going to dig out my copy and probably write a blog post about it at some point. But yeah, it's a tricky one, I think, for a lot of people to handle, but it's so important. You know, just it's so important to get you enthusiastic about writing back.
Yeah, yeah. It is. You'll get better responses if that enthusiasm comes over. Or just I think one of the things that came through in the brief we were talking about earlier on was that there's the enthusiasm within that organization for itself and for the problems that they wanted to achieve, but then also that an enthusiasm to hear from people's points of view. It's like, I'm interested in you. I want you to tell us something interesting about yourself and about your approach. And if you're interesting enough and you come over competent enough and you have the right experience, which we've laid out here, and there was just things in there like, we don't want a million case studies, just give us a few. But be really particular what it is that you did there that relates to us.
Yeah, lovely.
And things like that, which is, it's okay, right. We get what you're looking for. That makes a lot of sense. You know, the idea that's setting up, they're setting up something which is equal at that point in time.
Well, let's hope that by the time we next sit down to record, you will have had a successful outcome with that one. I might have had a successful outcome with the people that I'm speaking to next week. And more important than all of this is that Rexton will be in the playoffs.
Yeah.
Don't say that with such kind of like, yeah, but as if it's not going to happen. Come on. This like anything is possible.
They've put themselves in the position to make it happen.
Well, hopefully people found that an interesting discussion. I know that I did, because I'm constantly thinking about, you know, how to get the best out of people, but to encourage them to kind of make that first contact. So yeah, let's see how this one goes.
Yeah.
So thanks for joining us, and we will see you on the next one.
See you. Bye.